All right, live from the hills of Westwood, this is Long Story Short, the Daily Bruins Weekly News and Culture Talk Show on UCLRadio.com. I'm Michael Beezer, a senior biology student. Now, here are your hosts.
Good evening, UCLA. I'm Meral Eric. It's 6 p.m., and you're listening to Long Story Short at UCLRadio.com. Also, follow us on Twitter, at Daily Bruin Radio, and check out our Daily Bruin Radio Facebook page to check out all our stories and interviews. So, as you all know, Long Story Short always has three hosts, two co-hosting, and we take rotations. And it's my pleasure to introduce to you guys tonight our brand new host, Janaki.
Hey, Meral. Hi, Bruins. I'm really excited to be a part of the show. I'm Janaki Mehta, a third-year communication studies student, studying to become a journalist, and I've just gotten back from studying abroad, so I'm kind of reacclimatizing to things here at UCLA. It kind of feels like fall quarter for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. You were telling me you studied abroad. Where did you go again?
I went to Istanbul in Turkey.
Ooh, wait, I'm Turkish.
Are you really?
I am.
Oh, wow. I have not met very many Turkish people before my trip, but ever since I got back, I've been hearing it everywhere.
That's so awesome.
We'll have to practice our Turkish sometime.
Did you learn any words?
I learned a few.
Ooh, tell me.
There's the merhaba, which means hello.
Oh, my goodness.
Just like a greeting, or you can also say salam to say hello.
I'm impressed.
I'll have to learn more from you, though.
Definitely.
Now, back to the show. On Long Story Short, we don't mess around. From science and health to arts and politics, local news and campus buzz to social life and dating, we're here to talk about it all. That being said, we've got an exciting show tonight.
To start off the show, we have Carly Yoshida and other students sharing their creative ideas to raise funds for Dance Marathon 2014.
Followed by Veronica Shum, who will talk about how she spent her last quarter in China and traveling to neighboring countries, sharing some of the unique experiences she had living outside of the U.S.
Then, what do Ray Bradbury, Benjamin Franklin, and Susan Sontag have in common with the average Bruin? Find out when we share with you daily routines from famous writers.
So, Meral, Coachella tickets went on sale January 10th and sold out in less than 3 hours, which is just crazy.
Crazy. I heard about that.
Yeah. People are really loving the lineup this year. They've got headliners like Outkast, Muse, Arcade Fire. I'm sure their new album will be amazing on stage. And every year I consider going, but before I can decide, tickets are always gone. But one of the main musicians that I would have loved to see perform live would have been Blood Orange. Have you heard it?
I'm embarrassed to say I have not.
The album is really funky and really fantastic. But I guess we'll just have to listen to one of the songs from the album. It'll have to do. Here is Uncle Ace by Blood Orange. So last month, the Pediatric AIDS Coalition opened early registration for UCLA's Dance Marathon 2014. Dance Marathon is an annual philanthropic event in which dancers pledge to stand on their feet for 26 hours straight in support of children affected by HIV/AIDS. Dancers pay to register, and then they're encouraged to raise as much money as possible in order to support the cause.
UCLA students have come up with a number of creative ways to fundraise for the event. For instance, third-year aerospace engineering student Colin McAlpine is selling his personal artwork to raise money. We weren't able to get him in the studio today, but in his own words, he said, "Ever since I was little, I've been interested in art. So when Dance Marathon came around, I figured rather than just blindly asking people for money, I would offer to create a piece of artwork for them in exchange for a donation. It's kind of cool because people will ask me to combine multiple mediums and techniques into their piece, so it's totally customized to their liking. I've chalked old photographs, painted stained glass windows, sharpied graphics, and even designed a tattoo for a friend of mine. It's great because everyone wins. They get a piece of unique art. I enjoy creating it, and the money goes toward an outstanding cause." While second-year molecular cell and developmental biology student Manali Mohindra is also doing Dance Marathon, Manali decided to come up with a different creative way of fundraising. That's actually going to be through the sale of Indian food. So people are definitely coming up with a bunch of interesting ways to raise money for Dance Marathon. And actually, tonight in the studio, we have fourth-year English student Carly Yoshida to talk about a creative fundraiser that she came up with in order to raise money for her Dance Marathon fund. Hi, Carly. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
So, I have to ask, first, did you do Dance Marathon last year? A quick yes or no?
Yes, so this will be my third year on committee for Dance Marathon. I've been a part of the Pediatric AIDS Coalition, and I've actually raised the money for Dance Marathon all 4 years at UCLA.
Awesome. Okay, and so just to give us a basic background, like how much does it cost to register for Dance Marathon and how much money are participants expected to raise?
Mm-hmm. So if you register early, it's $20. Right now, registration is $30, and we ask all of our dancers to raise at least $250 in order to participate in the full event. And a lot of dancers like to go above and beyond, raising $500, $1,000, even more, which is really incredible. And if you're a member of the committee, what you mentioned, Colin and Manali and myself, we all are, we are expected to raise at least $500 for the cause.
Oh, wow.
That's incredible. And I hear that you came up with a cookie baking fundraiser. Can you tell me a little bit more about this idea and
yes.
what your inspiration was behind it?
Right. So when I was in high school, I discovered that I had a weird talent for baking cookies.
Okay.
And I started a cookie business when I was younger. And I would bake in my kitchen and sell them to my parents' friends and students. And I actually raised quite a bit of money. I was able to pay for a trip to New York my senior year of high school.
Wow.
Just through cookies. So when Dance Marathon came around and I knew I had to raise at least $500, I figured I would revive that cookie business because I enjoy baking and people enjoy eating cookies. So it's a great way to raise the money because it's a win-win situation. People get to give to a cause that's amazing and makes them feel good, and they get cookies out of it.
Awesome. And so word on the street is that you made a Facebook event for your cookie sales and that over 200 people clicked attending. Have a lot of these people actually been asking for the cookies? And if so, how, when, and where do you bake so many?
Right. Actually, last quarter, I made quite a bit of money baking cookies. It was really successful. And I think I told my roommates, I was like, I will pay for our gas bill because I'm using the oven literally three times a day. And I would get orders from friends, from random strangers who saw the Facebook event. So it was very successful. I probably made over $500 just baking, and I would bake out of my kitchen in my apartment.
Oh, that's great. Are you going to continue doing that all the way up until Dance Marathon?
Yes, definitely. So last quarter, I was raising money just for myself. And now I'm turning it back into my fundraiser for Dance Marathon. Uh-huh. So until the event ends, all the proceeds that I make will go right towards the cause and my fundraising total.
Mm-hmm.
And so I need to do another social media push right now to encourage people to order cookies. But it's great because a lot of people are more inclined to actually give an order when they know it's going to something that is so, when it's going towards a nonprofit and something that will benefit other people who need it.
Definitely. And do you anticipate that you'll be able to make your full $500 from cookie sales alone, or do you think you're going to...
I've been able to the past 2 years, so hopefully this year it will be successful again.
Awesome. And also, do you know any other people like on board with you or anything that have any other cool ways of fundraising besides the ones that we already mentioned?
Yeah, people get very creative for Dance Marathon fundraising because it can be hard to just ask people for money, especially, you know, strangers or friends you don't know as well. I had a friend who would make embarrassing YouTube videos for everyone that donated. He would do a dance for them. I have a friend who will clean people's apartments, do people's laundry, like small chores like that. I know someone who is posting embarrassing photos of himself, like from, the awkward years, 7th grade, 8th grade, every time someone makes a donation. So people definitely get creative.
That's awesome. Well, I think that's about all the questions we have for you, Carly. Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for coming in, and good luck with the rest of your fundraising, and I hope Dance Marathon goes great. I know it's so exhausting. I've done it once, and good luck to you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. You're listening to Long Story Short, the Daily Bruins weekly news and culture talk show. I'm Meral Eric.
And I'm Janaki Mehta. Don't go away, listeners. Next up, we have Veronica Shum sharing her fall quarter experience in China.
And check out the Sesame Street version of I Love It by Aesopop called Me Want It, But Me Wait. Apparently, it's about eating cookies in moderation. See you soon.
But me wait, me want it, but me wait.
While all of us Bruins love UCLA, one of the greatest experiences it has to offer is far from campus. Studying abroad is a wonderful way to live in another part of the world, integrate with unfamiliar cultures, and meet people who value a lot of the same things you might. I know it's been one of the most enriching experiences for me when I went abroad this past quarter. And I spoke to third-year sociology student Veronica Shum earlier today. She just returned pretty recently from studying in Hong Kong, and she traveled to a couple other countries, so we can hear about that. She told me about some of the, you know, lesser-known aspects of being in those countries, so here she is.
So, Veronica, you just got back from China, and you said you spent a few months there doing a study abroad program through UCLA. So how is it to be back?
Feels a little weird, a little surreal. I mean, compared to life in Hong Kong is super crazy. There's people all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. America seems very relaxed. Like, it feels like home.
Yeah, that's good. Good to know. And you're finding it okay to come back into UCLA after being away for so long. And, you know, I think you said you just got back a couple weeks ago, so it must have been a very sudden change. But are you adapting okay?
Yeah, I mean, so far so good. Of course, there's a little bit of jet lag when I first came back, but now I'm slowly adjusting to it, getting back into the groove of things.
Cool. So when you were in China, how long were you there for?
I got there late August and left late December, so around 4 months.
Okay, cool. And did you do any traveling around? I know you said you were in Hong Kong for your studies, but did you do any traveling around within China or to other countries while you were there?
I actually went to a couple places in mainland China, Yangshuo, Guilin, Shenzhen, which are all relatively close to Hong Kong. And then I also took a trip to Japan and Thailand.
Oh, wow. That must have been pretty different from living in China. Did you spend long amounts of time in Japan or Thailand?
I spent about a week in Japan, and I actually went to Thailand twice.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So what were some of the things you saw in Thailand during your time there?
The first time I went to Thailand specifically was for the Lantern Festival. So basically I went to Bangkok, and then we took a sleeper bus, actually, to Chiang Mai, and that's where you got to see the really big lanterns floating in the air, and they also had these kind of water lanterns that you got to float down the river.
And what exactly is the Lantern Festival, and why are people floating lanterns down the river?
Well, the Lantern Festival is generally specific to, it's kind of religious for the Buddhists, but a lot of tourists go just because it's a really big event nowadays. And you can literally just look into the sky at any time during the night, and there are just a ton of lanterns. And it's kind of just a big, really happy festival where people get together and just have fun, eat street food, and just have a good time.
Cool. And you floated some lanterns down the river. You said something about it, like, symbolizing something, right? What does that mean?
Yeah, so the water lanterns are actually a type of kind of payback to the water gods, since, you know, we use water all year round. So this is kind of just like a thank you, and thank you for letting us use your water, and, you know, sorry we're semi-abusing it, but...
Well, that's a really good lesson for Americans to learn. We use our resources plentifully here, so
yeah.
That's nice that the people want to sort of express their gratitude for water and the earth. In Thailand, what were some other places that you went, and what did you see on your second trip around?
Yeah, so also one of the more interesting things that I got to do in Bangkok was actually visit a red light district. So it's basically like a prostitution district area. And that was actually really interesting because there's a lot of ladyboys there, which is pretty much like a third gender over there. So, yeah, it's just really interesting how accepting everyone was and just how open Thailand was about that.
Uh-huh.
So it was really cool. Change definitely, because I don't think it would be the same even here or in Hong Kong, definitely.
And you were okay to like walk around in the red light districts and everything, and it's a common thing to do to go visit them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think for tourists it's kind of common, but as long as you're with, you know, at least three other people, you're totally fine. It's relatively safe, you know, as long as you just don't walk into the more sketchier areas, you're fine.
Right. I also heard that the time zones in China don't vary the way that they do here. You know, like the actual geographic space spans over 5 time zones, but I've heard that it's exactly the same time throughout the entire country. Is that true? And does that affect your stay there and your daily life in any way?
I personally didn't really get to experience it that much,
mm-hmm.
but it was definitely interesting. I mean, having friends that went to Beijing or Shanghai, I could just talk to them any time of the day, and it was, you know, exactly the same, so
yeah,
convenient in that way.
So you said you were spending your time in Hong Kong, and you also went to other parts of China. So was Hong Kong pretty different from mainland China?
Yeah, I feel like what a lot of people don't really realize is that Hong Kong kind of has its own system. It's pretty much like its own country. There's, it's basically, they're one country, but they work under two systems, and that's what their policy. Hong Kong is technically called a special administration region. So although it's, you know, part of China, they were taken over by the British for so long that a lot of how their government works and stuff like that are still the same. So it's definitely different in that way. It's almost like being in an entirely different country.
Right. Yeah, that's, I didn't really realize the extent to which they were different. And yeah, like coming back here, how are you evaluating like your life here differently with how it was to live there in such a different political atmosphere and a different social atmosphere? I'm sure interacting with people was really different. I know when I went abroad to Turkey this fall, coming back here and talking to people, and the things we talk about, it's all very different. So what was your experience with that?
It's interesting because, in Hong Kong, there's actually kind of a controversy going on. Not controversy, but kind of an issue with, since they are slightly different, Hong Kong and, you know, mainland China, with a lot of people from mainland China that are coming into Hong Kong. So I actually took, like, a Hong Kong popular culture class, and a lot of the stuff we learned was, you know, Hong Kong identity. Like, what does it mean to be a Hong Kong person? Versus, you know, mainland China. Like, are you Chinese living in Hong Kong? Are you a Hong Kongese person? Are you, like, Hong Kong living in China? So a lot of that, like, blurred lines is kind of a lot of things that we focused on. So coming to the U.S. is just, I kind of appreciate how open the U.S. is and, you know, how welcoming we are to everyone for the most part. And it's just really interesting to see things like that, especially when I went to different countries. It was like, oh, where are you from? And I was like, oh, I'm from America. And a lot of people would just give me looks and be like, no, like, you can't be from America, you're Asian.
Yeah.
But so I definitely appreciate that coming back to the U.S. and all the different diversity.
Much less rigid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially in, you know, Bay Area and L.A. where there's a ton of people. It's just,
yeah, from all over the place.
Yeah.
The rest of the world isn't quite such a big melting pot of people from all over the world. So yeah, that's something I totally appreciate too. And yeah, so well, welcome back, and I'm glad you had a great experience there.
Thanks.
Will you be going back anytime soon?
You know, I really hope so.
And did you pick up any Chinese while you were there?
Oh yeah, I definitely improved my Cantonese.
Yeah.
And I actually took a Chinese Mandarin course over there for foreign speakers. But it was actually really interesting, and I'm continuing to learn Chinese here at UCLA.
Cool. So you brought a little bit of China back with you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and
yeah, no problem.
Have a great rest of your quarter here at UCLA.
Thanks.
Up next, we will compare some daily routines of famous figures to those of some fellow Bruins. Here's a traditional Chinese piece titled, A Thousand Sounds of Buddha, played on the instrument, the guzheng. Last week, Janaki and I listened to the silly and serious resolutions from students on Bruin Walk. Well, as we all know, in order to keep all of these New Year's resolutions, we need new routines. I know that I personally made a bunch of resolutions this year, so I decided to go on brainpickings.org to see what routines some famous writers used to have. Here were a few of my favorites. So first, from Susan Sontag, she said, I will get up every morning no later than 8. Can break this rule once every 2 weeks. So, literally this quarter, I've been trying to get up so early. This morning, I actually woke up at 5:50 a.m. to try productive. Have you, Janaki, been getting up early or what?
I mean, mostly because of jet lag so far. It's kind of stuck around, which is nice, but... it's funny because I was on Brain Pickings and I kind of liked Susan Sontag's one. She wrote a routine like a few years after she wrote that one about being really productive. She wrote something along the lines of how she writes in spurts because she lets all of the pressure build up. And she said, it's a very undisciplined way of working and makes me not very prolific, but I'm too interested in many other things. And I think that's kind of what I'm trying to overcome right now is not being so distracted all the time and... yeah, just letting all that pressure build up. I think that's when I work best. But, you know,
completely.
More power to you, waking up that early.
Yeah, but I don't know. I still do procrastinate, and I still agree with Susan Sontag on that one. Like, you know, as a writer, it does come in bursts a lot of the time.
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm glad to see that we're not the only ones that feel that way. So from Henry Miller, though, I also loved See Friends and Read in Cafes because I try to explain this to a lot of people, especially my non-journalist, non-writer friends, but mm-hmm. I have this thing, this affinity for cafes. I love cafes, and even with my schoolwork, like even back in high school when I had AP exams, the morning of an AP exam, I would go to a cafe. Like my brain just works there.
Right, right. Get the creative juices flowing.
Do you have that experience?
Yeah, totally. I do love going to cafes. I love going to Broad anytime I can. It's much quieter there. So.
And Janaki has a coffee right next to us, you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I just got into iced coffee. But yeah, another one I really liked, Benjamin Franklin, he talked about, like, according to his agenda, he said he'd wake up at 5 a.m. and ask himself, what do I have planned for the day? And at the end of the day, which was around 1 a.m. for him, he would say, what have I accomplished for the day? And for me, I love making lists and I love checking things off. I really don't get that much done otherwise. And, you know, I'll go in and add little things like brush teeth and take shower, things I would do anyway. But, you know, it just makes you feel great about yourself.
That's so funny. I do the same. And at the end of my checklist, if I did something extra, I'll like add that extra checkbox just so yeah, I can check it off.
Completely, completely. It makes you feel so good about yourself.
Well, okay. Now that we see what routines some big names have followed, I would say it's a perfect time to see what daily routines some of our fellow Bruins are following. So, thanks to our radio contributor, Emma Oland, we have a montage of little routines from fellow Bruins, so take a listen.
BJ Fong. I'm a psych major. I'm a third year. Okay, on a daily basis, in terms of studying, I will probably commit, or I'll allocate more time towards studying and less time, like, partying, I guess.
My name is Justin Correa, and I'm a fourth-year English major. I'm not always the most consistent, but I try to read my Bible, and I try to be just plugged into community and grow a lot from my friends and just knowing that they have a lot to offer me, too. So it's not so much growing from something that I think I can get for myself, but growing from God and growing from other people.
I'm Lori Anisteris. I'm a third-year geophysics and space physics major. First one is adding mouthwash to my morning and night routine. Flossing, probably next year, you know, accomplish something every day, so that'll be like a nice surprise, kick more ass in school, you know.
My name is Elijah Keenan. I am a third year English major. Get up early every morning. I'm really tired of sleeping in, and I feel like if I don't, like, years down the line, I'm going to be that guy who can't ever wake up early and is going to be fat and laying in his bed watching TV, and I don't want to be that, and so I'd rather be more productive and force myself to get up early.
My name's Leona Ramon. I'm a dance major, and I'm a sophomore. Well, I want to become healthier, and I definitely want to bring yoga into my daily, you know, routine at UCLA. So going to the gym way more often and taking some classes, some yoga classes, will definitely be my resolution this year.
All right. Well, that was definitely really cool. Could you relate to any of those?
I mean, you know, obviously staying focused in school and all of that. Everyone can relate to those. What about you, Merle? Anything you can, you've been trying to do every day or even with any of the authors we talked about?
You know, like I said, just that one guy waking up early. I mean, I don't know about the fat part, but the waking up early. All right. I think that's about enough with our daily routines, but you've been listening to Long Story Short, the Daily Bruins weekly news and culture talk show at UCLARadio.com. Don't forget to check us out and like us on the Daily Bruin Radio Facebook page or follow us on Twitter at Daily Bruin Radio. The show is also available as a podcast on iTunes under Daily Bruin Radio.
A special thanks to our guests, Carly Yoshida and Veronica Shum. Also, thanks a lot to broadcast producer Christiana Cabal, our radio director, Bianca Rosas, and our sound engineer, Hannah Jacobs.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and have a happy second week.
Thank you for starting your week with us, Bruins. Until next time, I'm Janaki Mehta.